This fucking trip down the rabbit hole is brought to you by my patrons. Patrons are people that donate a monthly recurring sum to help support the podcast. I want to shout out a couple of them, and we're going to get things moving in relatively short order today because we got a banger, and I have no clue where this one's going to wind up today. First and foremost, want to shout out my friends over at The Trader's Path. The Trader's Path is a brand new investor education and day trader service. They have day trade strategies that work in all markets, red or green. They trade both short and long setups. They trade equities and options. You're going to get watch lists. You're going to get investor education. You're going to get a daily live stream. And the link to their service is in my podcast description. This podcast is also brought to you by my friends over at Sanglucci and the Sanglucci Steam Room. These dear friends of mine that I've known for 6 or 7 years now are experts in following flow in the options market and using that to make moves in the equities market and also in the options market, following the big money. Options and trading psychology. These guys are huge on market psychology. I've had both Charlie Bathgate and Sanglucci on the podcast numerous times. You can go back and check out those podcasts if you want to know what these studs are about. There's a link to not only their Steam Room sign up, but also their master course that they offer and the 3LT playbook, which are the three strategies that Lucci has used to turn himself into a seven-figure trader. And folks, he did pay for quite a hefty cabana bill at the Wynn Resort when we were in Las Vegas last week. So whatever the fuck he's doing, it's working. Links are in my podcast description to check out my friends over at Sanglucci. This podcast also brought to you by my friends at Rumorhound. Rumorhound is a brand new piece of AI-based software that's going to help you determine which merger and acquisition rumors in the marketplace, whether you see them on Twitter, on CNBC, in your social media, in your chat rooms, are worth paying attention to, and which ones may not be. It looks at a proprietary list of variables, things like whether or not the transaction makes financial sense, what the credibility of the source of the rumors are, and a bunch of different other variables that it then puts into the blender of its AI-based software, which spits you out a nice, easy-to-understand recommendation because you don't need to be an AI programmer to use the thing. It's for the everyday trader. It's a great tool to have in your tool belt. Check out my friends over at Rumorhound. Also, and that, by the way, is also in the podcast description. Also, my friends over at Focused Compounding, you can follow them on Twitter at Focused Compound. Their links are in my podcast description as well. And all these guys focus on are trades and areas of the market that other people, analysts, the mainstream media, have not covered. So if you're looking for a niche, you're looking for guys that do things differently, check out my friends over at Focused Compounding. And they have a YouTube channel, and check out Focused Compound on Twitter, at Focused Compound, because they put a lot of their stuff up for free. So there's not even, you don't even need to pay anything. Just follow them on Twitter, and you can check them out. They're in the podcast description. This podcast also brought to you by my friends at Hella Bacon, who shoot machine guns out of helicopters in Texas. My friend Jameson Trinker, my friends at Corvus Gold, Monero, my buddy Jay Mintzmeyer, the fantastic shipping analyst, Russell Valenti, Matthew Zimmer and Nicholas Parks, Nathan Michaud at Investors Underground, Chris Bede, Ken R., and Chris Boas. And also, before we get started, some of my most recent patrons, the people that have donated since the last podcast and shown their support, I want to shout them out as well. Christian A., Peter McCausian, Mark Wicker, Antonio Bockleg, and some of my older patrons, Mike Hanlon, Chris Bunting, and Scott Beck, thank you so much. Of course, Nick Zizis, I haven't forgotten about you. Michael Kantowski and Mark Woolard, thank you guys so much for sticking with me. Gains on Gains and the guys at Flow Algo, Money Lobster, I see you guys all over the place. All right, we usually have a 2-drink minimum for this podcast. First and foremost, I'm going to say nothing in this podcast is investing advice. Do your research elsewhere. I am not a financial advisor. I'm not registered. I hold no licenses. I hold no registrations. So this is not financial advice. That's number one. Number two, this podcast is not life advice. Just because I'm doing it or the guest is doing it, you shouldn't just go out and do it. Because in this case, we're talking to a man that pretty much has 9 lives, and I'm not sure you're going to be able to survive doing 1/10 of what this man has done in his lifetime. So let that be a warning to you. Usually we have a 2-drink minimum for this podcast. We're going to kick it up to at least a 4 or 5 for this one. I was going to do this podcast completely sober with a cup of tea, but I ran downstairs and got a bottle just in case things get fucking weird today. I can't wait. Who is on the line with me today but none other than famed cybersecurity expert and just general international man of mystery, the legendary John McAfee is with me today. How are you today, sir?
I'm not sure how legendary I am, but I'm certainly here with you today, and I'm very happy on the show.
You can be legendary for a range of things, you know? But your name will definitely go down in the history books, my friend.
I think maybe legendary in the sheer volume and number of wrong women I have married and lived with the exception of my current wife, Janice, perhaps in that area, certainly nothing.
Well, like I said, you know, you can go down for being legendary for a number of things, and I hope we get to discuss all of them today. That's what I'm hopeful for. Listen, my friend, I wanted to open this podcast by reminding you kindly that you did in fact put out a tweet some time ago that if Bitcoin did not reach 1 million by the end of 2020, you would, quote, eat your own dick. And I wanted to check in on that front and see how things were going.
All right. Well, let me ask yourself and also all of your listeners the following question. There are only, as we know, 21 million Bitcoins that can ever be mined or ever exist.
Right.
3 million of them are left to mine. While we are mining, two things are happening. The number of people losing Bitcoins now by forgetting their wallet address, their keys, losing their smartphone, or their laptop or their pad just dies and can't be repaired, is exceeding the number of Bitcoins mined. Well, I knew this was going to happen. We have already lost, of the 21 million, 7 million have been lost forever. So, and add to that, Bitcoin usage is growing. More people are using it, and less coins are existing every day. Well, just run some numbers, people, using basic algebra that you learned in the 10th grade. If you can remember any of that shit, you can figure out that if it's not $1 million by the end of 2020, then 2 plus 2 is not 4.
So you're essentially saying that there are Bitcoins that have been mined that we're never going to see again, effectively reducing the float of Bitcoins.
Yes, reducing the supply. The supply will eventually approach zero. I mean, given enough time and given human fallibility that we seem to lose important shit like our keys. I mean, it happens. And as it's continuing to happen, of course, the supply will decline. And since you can't mint any more of them like you can with some ERC-20 tokens or what have you, then please God, what is the ultimate outcome? At some point in the next 50 years, Bitcoin will be worth $10 billion, guaranteed.
Okay, so I want to run a couple of things by you. And I want to run a couple of the detractor arguments that make sense to me, and I'd love to have your response to them since you're far more versed in cryptos than I am. What do you say to people that say, you know, maybe say collectively the world governments decide to just make it illegal? What happens in that situation?
Well, I mean, the same thing, unfortunately, that happened to things like alcohol during Prohibition in America, and weed, which for the past 75 years has been illegal from a federal standpoint, what happens is we all stop drinking and nobody smokes weed. It's not going to matter what you choose to do in the privacy of your home, especially with your own fucking finances, nobody's business but yours. All that will happen is people will migrate to privacy coins and distributed exchanges where you do not have to give your email address or your name or your social security or your bank, nothing. You just wander in and do some trades and wander out. How, please God, tell me, can government stop that?
I don't know, and that's why I posed the question to you, because, you know, from a technological standpoint, you're way more well-versed. So what you're saying is there's a way that people will ultimately be able to transact, hold, and, you know, keep their Bitcoin without, like, now if you go to sign up for Coinbase, like what you're saying, they want your social security number, they want your fucking tax ID. I mean, they want everything. You're essentially signing up for a regular bank account if you sign up for Coinbase. So you're saying there will be ways outside of that mainstream that'll allow people to continue to transact it, even if it becomes illegal worldwide.
Well, listen, I just released McAfeeDex.com a week ago, a little over a week ago. We have over 100,000 unique visitors so far, and we don't ask anything. You don't have to input an email address or your name or your address, the bank information. You don't have to send us a copy of your driver's license or passport. No. We have no control. It is completely decentralized and, at the same time, completely distributed. Try shutting that motherfucker down. It's all it's all based on smart contracts on the Ethereum blockchain. And all we're doing now, this is our beta release that came out last Monday. We're now adding, we'll have Tron in 2 weeks, and then we'll have Binance, EOS, NEO, and other blockchains. Initially, no cross-chain. Keep in mind, this is beta, but by the first quarter of next year, we'll have cross-chain before cross-chain transactions between any and all of the exchanges. So, I mean, of the blockchains. So it's here today. You can't shut that exchange down because it's on the blockchain. I'm sorry, that's the beauty of the blockchain. It is an immutable record of transactions and smart contracts that are placed on it. You can't shut it down. If you shut down the McAfeeDex.com, we already have 15 other portals around the world that people are setting up to, or have set up to access those smart contracts. So it can't be shut down. Just like you can't monitor everybody's actions in terms of what they put between their lips and light up. Right. You can't do it. I'm sorry, you can't do the same thing here with crypto.
Well, one of the typical pushbacks I've heard from people, and one that has made sense to me, although it is a bit off the catastrophic deep end, is, you know, for people that are holding Bitcoin as a store of value, or they're holding it as a safe haven against central banks, against, you know, everything in general, right? Same reason you'd hold gold as a hedge against the whole fucking system. You know, what happens in an instance like that where people don't have access to power? How do they transact or access their Bitcoins in that case?
Okay, I'm not sure I understand your question. Access to power.
Access to power, meaning if I don't have power in my home, or I don't have power in my municipality or in my state, and I don't have a way to access, you know, whereas normally I'd be able to reach out and grab a bar of gold, and I would be able to physically transport that somewhere with me if it was an end of the world type situation, how would you have access to your Bitcoin? What happens in a catastrophic scenario like that?
If it's an end of the world type situation, it doesn't make a flying fuck, because if you've got a bank account, it's gone. And what you've stored under your mattress or bars of gold, try buying a cup of coffee or a loaf of bread with a fucking bar of gold. What do you do with it? Slice pieces off and measure it? No, please God, get real. We have greater problems than financial issues. Issues, we have problems like, how do I get, convince my neighbor not to shoot me to get my food, and convince him I won't shoot him? Please, God, get real, people. That's the most naive and childish fucking argument I've ever heard.
But, John, there is an argument that you could make where, say it's less than an end of the world type situation, but it gets down to brass tacks where there's no power. And you want to be sure that you have access to the wealth that you've accumulated and perhaps stored in Bitcoin, you know, whereas you would be able to, and I'm not talking about buying a cup of coffee. I'm talking about, say I wanted to just move 50 miles east and I wanted to do it by, you know, some means that I didn't require any power to do. I just wanted to do it manually. And I wanted to throw a couple of bars of gold in a bag and take it with me versus, going somewhere where there's not going to be. How would I live out in the woods without power and have access to my Bitcoin?
You know, I would say to those who, in a not the end of the world scenario, that prefer to take a bag full of gold rather than a Colt 45 or a Glock 9mm are idiots. Please, God, wake up, folks.
Well, that's why people keep their gold and their guns close together, Mr. McAfee.
I don't keep gold close to my guns, man. I keep my running shoes close to my guns.
Wonderful. All right. So what else do I want to talk about with you? I wanted to see if you would touch on the topic of psychedelics with me. And here's why. Because I was reading about your history today in preparation for this interview. And noticed that, of course, you have been a great experimenter with various substances, drugs, alcohol, etc., things of that nature, as many of my audience here on the podcast also has. So you're among your kind here, I think, to some degree. I had a gentleman on yesterday named Charlie Bathgate, and we had two days ago, we had a wonderful 2-hour discussion about his thoughts on microdosing and his thoughts on psychedelics. And I wanted to know, what I was reading was basically that, you know, you had experimented back in the 70s and the 80s. I wanted to know, maybe if you could tell a little bit about what role psychedelics have played in your life and whether or not they still play a role in your life.
First of all, let me say something about microdosing. I'm sorry, but for those proponents of microdosing, I've got to classify you in the same category of those people who have sex without penetration. You know, let's get the tip just in contact and say we had sex. Okay, that's fine. But let's pass that by. What's my opinion? Well, drugs are evil. Jesus, God, people. I mean, just the other night. Okay, so I was stumbling down drunk, stoned out of my mind on weed, and decided to drop acid. Well, fuck me. No one should be allowed to do stupid shit like that. And yet I did. So no, of course drugs are evil.
How'd it work out?
What else do you want to know?
Well, I want to know how that particular instance worked out.
Well, not well. I mean, the body does have physical limitations when you slosh, you know, of a quart of hard liquor into it. I mean, the body, I don't care what you want to put in your mind. I mean, you know, take 1,000 micrograms of LSD. You are not going to be sober. I don't give a shit what anybody says.
Right.
Terrible shit happens always. So, for those of you in the listening audience, especially, those of you under the age of 18, never touch a drug unless it's a very harmless drug, like coffee, cigarettes. I'm going to do that better than whatever. Or heroin. Heroin has very little cultural impact. You just shoot it up and you lie down on bed all day. Well, fuck me. That's harming no one. So please, If you have to do something, choose coffee, tea, or heroin.
I do not condone or endorse those statements. All right. Let me ask you a question. I'm hoping that your sarcasm is not lost on the audience. Otherwise, I'm going to have a huge fucking problem on my hands. But let me ask you another question. When you do psychedelics, what is it that what are you seeking?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure why you would separate out psychedelics from the vast range of drugs, empathogens and speedy substances.
Well, they have a different, they have a far different effect on your body and on your mind.
That's true. Or ketamine. So hang on. No. Psychedelics do not have a greater impact. You want an impact? You take methylene dioxypyrovaleron, better known as MDEV, the drug that people on the street ate people's faces off while they were on that drug. No, that's a fucking drug.
Well, I'm not talking about profound impact. I said a different impact. I said psychedelics have a different impact, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they're just certainly a mental trip. I mean, I don't know anybody on acid who's wanted to eat somebody's face. I mean, hey, I knew someone who fell out of a window and got a compound fracture in their forearm, walked back upstairs, sat down and continued the discussion, and everybody going, should we call an ambulance? And people going, even the guy with a bone protruding from his arm going, I don't think so. I don't think they'd understand. So trust me, I understand psychedelics, and there's none that I have not taken way past an overdose point. But I don't favor psychedelics. I mean, psychedelics are like, you want to enter a cartoon, you want to live in your own world, you want to be Jesus. You want to be Jesus, you take enough LSD, and you will be. And that's fine. And I did my time with psychedelics, but I prefer cathinones. I mean, that wild class, like, of which MDPV is a class. That wild. I mean, if you think that acid or MDA, you name the fucking psychedelic, if you think that they are something, you fucking try a cathinone. You'll know what a drug is. So, and I favor, I'm the person who, if you're going to do something, then fucking do it right. If you're going to jump into the pool, jump into the fucking pool. Don't wade in, throw your ass in. And so this is how I've always approached drugs. Cathinones. I'm
there. Hey, I got that impression about you. Believe it or not.
I'm sorry?
No. I'm just telling my listeners, John McAfee says don't do drugs, and that wraps up that section of the interview. The moral of the story is don't do drugs. I just changed, a lot of people are sitting at home that probably have never heard from you before, and every time the little McAfee fucking thing pops up on their windows, they're going to be looking at it a little bit differently than they were about 20 minutes ago. I have news for you.
Well, that's fine. I don't use that software, and neither should anyone. In fact, neither should anyone use any antivirus software. It doesn't fucking work anymore. That paradigm of protection is long gone. And I started saying this 10 years ago.
Tell me about that.
If you're using McAfee or Norton or anything, especially if you're using McAfee, go onto YouTube and look at how to uninstall McAfee, and it'll show you what to do with it.
Well, why do you say it doesn't do anything? You think it's a waste of time for people? I mean, you're McAfee, so talk to me.
It doesn't protect you. Hang on, I haven't been with that company for 20 years, okay, so don't blame me for anything. No, the antivirus paradigm, that paradigm of protection no longer functions, not in this world. I mean, yeah, 20 years ago, hell yes, that's all there was, and it worked. But hackers, malware, governmental agencies have infiltrated the space with sophistication so advanced, you wouldn't believe it. So throw those things away. Go onto YouTube, look up how to uninstall McAfee. You'll see my face there explaining how to do it, and do it.
Is that the video with you where you got all the women around you and you're shirtless with the gun?
Is that the video, Janice? Yeah, that's the one.
I remember that from a couple years ago when you released that. And I was like, oh, this is different than most instructional videos I've seen, during my traditional schooling.
I think it's the only instructional video in the world that has almost 10 million views. Okay.
But in all seriousness, John, what do you – I mean, look, you're the pioneer here. You're the expert in cybersecurity. What are things that, like, people that are not technologically sound, my random listeners at home, what does John McAfee say? Like, what are, like, two or three basic things they can do to make sure that their privacy and their computer security is protected within reason? I mean, I know, obviously, they don't know the half of what the fuck's going on out there the way that you do. But within reason, I mean, what would you recommend?
All right. I would recommend changing your worldview first. Because if you think if you think, you the listening audience, if you think you can attain privacy in this world, especially in America,
sure,
and then move out of your mom's basement and look at the reality around you, because there is no privacy. So what do I recommend? I recommend accepting that truth and acting accordingly. You want to say something secret to your wife? Go out in the country, leave your phones and all of your electronic gear in the front seat of the car. Walk a quarter of a mile away into a field where there's no electrical poles or anything else around you, and then whisper it in your spouse's ear. That's the only privacy you have today, people. I promise you.
How bad do you really think it's gotten? I mean, do you worry more about things like giant social media companies, or do you worry more about things like the government, or do you think they're one and the same? I mean, what concerns you deeply that you think most people just haven't taken the red pill on yet?
But it doesn't matter whether it's the red pill or the blue pill. I mean, you can talk about social media and your internet life, or you can talk about reality, which is the air that you breathe and the structures and people around you. Let's start with that latter, the reality around you. So you're not on social media, but you're crossing a street in a city. I don't give a shit what city or what street. As long as it's in America, you have a dozen cameras watching you, many of them with high-tech audio sensors with a highly focused microphone that can listen to a whisper from 100 yards away. So this is that reality, the one where you're not in social media. If you're in social media, every fucking thing that you do, every character that you type, every communication, whether it be in an open comment or a private direct message, is being monitored and watched. If not by the government, then by Facebook or Twitter, under the guise of their own studying of their technology so that they might improve it. This is your reality, people. You don't have privacy. You've got two worlds. One in which you can escape momentarily, which is the real world. You drive into the country and whisper into your spouse's ear. And the other you cannot escape. Because as long as you are online, whether it is audio, video, text, a graph, Morse code, I don't give a flying fuck, it's being watched. And you think that these things like, encryption, we're going to encrypt your communication to the point that nobody can decrypt it. Well, who gives a shit? Nobody is in the middle anymore. They're on both ends. So as you type something into your encrypted messenger,
right,
that's what's being monitored. And when you display something on the receiving end, no matter what it is, even if it's a picture, you can get into the screen capture of the operating system and see it. Please God, people, there's nothing that's private online.
John, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was yesterday I was reading a little bit about some site that had been busted on the dark web, and it had started some theories from some people on social media, one of which I was interested in your take on, one of which was the, I don't know if you want to call it a conspiracy theory, but the theory that the NSA, in fact, created Bitcoin and is using it as a tool to monitor illegal activity. Do you think there's a possibility of that?
Absolutely not. I mean, there are only about a dozen candidates for Satoshi, and there were at least 10 people intimately involved in the development of Bitcoin, right, starting in papers 30 years ago. And Craig Wright, even though I can guarantee he's not Satoshi, he was in fact intimately involved in the development of Bitcoin. grant him that. So, no, please, God, no. All of these rumors and things that are happening about, oh, it's the NSA or the CIA, that stems from people who don't know the history. It's absolutely not a government agency. This is the first technology developed by the people. The people, not by IBM or Microsoft or Google or Samsung. No, the people. And it is one of the most powerful of technologies, and it must remain with the people. And we have to please drop these childish rumors and assumptions that have no factual basis and get on board with what's really happening. We, the people, created Bitcoin, and we, the people, must keep control of it.
Yeah, I remember reading when I was first introduced to Bitcoin and Satoshi, and of course, it's a huge mystery as to who created it, reading that 25, 30 years ago, there were a group of programmers that, as you said, had distributed white papers and had, you know, programmed and conceptualized the idea of this digital currency, and that there were like several different there were several different types of digital currency that were created but never made it, and that this was kind of born out of that group of guys that had focused on that. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, more or less. I mean, it's all a bunch of math formulas, you know, it's hashing formulas and the uses of hashing that, again, date back to 1985. That's all this is. Now, we have time for one more question.
Oh, shit. Okay, well, I better make it a good one. I'm sorry. Oh, man. I got about six more written down here. So let's talk real quick about your presidential run and the upcoming election, if you don't mind. I'd be interested in hearing what's going on with your campaign. I was on your campaign website today and just checking out to see if everything was still active, and I see you still have the people that are working in different parts of the U.S. trying to get your message out. I'd love to hear about where your campaign is, what you think about the potential nominees already, and what you think about the race in 2020, and anything you'd like to add on that.
You bet. Okay, first and foremost, I don't want to be president, which is fortunate, because there is no way in hell I could ever be president. I mean, anybody who thinks that I could, you're taking too many drugs, because I can't. No one other than one of the two parties, selected heirs apparent,
right,
will ever be president until the corruption within our system is fixed. So that's not my goal. What is my goal? I want the national stage. I ran under the Libertarian banner in 2016. I got all the way to John Stossel on Fox News for a national debate. Well, fuck me, that's all I need. That's all I want. I mean, I don't want to run this country, because no one does other than the shadowy, covert agencies that we ourselves have created. But no, I don't want that. I just want to point out to people things that a 74-year-old man who was an American in the 1940s and lived through the 50s, what that old man perceives as to what has happened to our government and what needs to be undone. That's all.
What has happened and what needs to be undone?
Well, I think it started, I think, with Dwight Eisenhower when he left our office in the late 50s, who warned us about the military-industrial complex and the darker forces of secrecy. What was he talking about? He was talking about the CIA, the NSA. Well, the CIA wasn't active back then. The NSA, the military covert agencies, those that have secrets and can keep them by simply saying national security, so that even presidents and Congress cannot see the data. These people can decide on their own what they think is best for the nation, without our government, without checks and balances, without rule of law. And so this has gone wrong. These covert agencies acting collectively control America and much of the world. It's a very simple problem, but until we all recognize it, nothing can be done. When we do recognize it, well, we still have one thing, the vote. If the current administration or the next cannot solve this problem, boot their ass out and run a fresh new batch of young people with some cojones and ideas and energy. And who cares about the experience? Because what experience do our politicians have? Well, the experience in taking money from our pocket and put it in theirs.
Right.
Experience in deception, lies, propaganda, political maneuvering and manipulation. Well, shit, do we need that experience? I don't think so.
Are you optimistic about anyone in the United States government, whether it's a presidential candidate or maybe a congressperson? Is there anybody within the U.S. government that you see as a beacon of optimism?
Well, I mean, if Jesus Christ himself were running with God as his running mate, they couldn't do anything. I mean, our system is bound. Listen, presidents get into that chair for 4 years or 8 years at the most. The people who control the government, those who've been there as lifelong employees,
sure,
they're there for 40 years. The president is merely a passing, insignificant personality. And if you think presidents have power, well, read some newspapers.
John,
and that's it. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, sir.
Take care. Well, I had a litany of other questions I wanted to ask Mr. McAfee, but sounds like his time is very valuable and he needs to get back to doing whatever it is that he's doing. I appreciate his time today. I would have loved to have spoke to him longer. Mr. McAfee, I'd love to speak to you again if you have the time. Certainly the most important question I had, can you recommend a drink recipe for my listeners? I did not get a chance to ask, but maybe he'll tweet it out on social media for me. Regardless, got a great group of guests coming up next week. And for right now, I'm gonna go downstairs to try to figure out what the fuck just happened. I'm out of here. Peace.